Park, and welcome to another edition of Punkonomics, broadcasting live here from WPRK, Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College and the best in basement radio. And my name is Jesse Velez, and right next to me is our host, Dr. Benjamin Balick.
Yep, that'd be me.
All right, Dr. Balick, and we have a few guests here. Would you take the honors of doing the introductions?
Well, directly after I moan and complain that I'm very stressed out and not in keeping up with the material because I'm in the process of being promoted, or hopefully being promoted. I'm a little stressed here, working on, you know, my statements and all that. Faculty are quite the whining demographic, aren't we? But anyways, I'm a little bit out of touch with things, but that's all going to be corrected by our guests and subsequent discussion, and I'm looking forward to pull myself out of my own affairs and learn something new, so that's always good. So we have a return guest. We have our, you know, resident regular, Jose.
Hello, everybody.
Visiting professor at the Egon department.
Yeah, it's been fun hanging out with the Punkonomics.
So we'll take responsibility for him. Not for the views of opinion of the show. I'll show the
that's
responsibility
true.
For him.
That's true. Let me just say it formally so he won't get sued. Right. The views of opinion stated here today are not a dose of Rollins College, the staff, or the staff at WPRK. Of course, we're right.
Yeah. our return guest is Carolina, and she's going to, and we have a brand new guest that we just met and already started talking. So you just start talking, people.
Yeah, well, you've let us come on and talk a few times about TPP and what our concerns is with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Mm-hmm. We know one of the chapters, there's a lot with fracking, a lot of interest, and that's how they got Japan to sit at the table initially, because Japan needs our natural gas. Mm-hmm. But when you try to talk about it in the public, there's just this total disbelief that it's not going to happen. If someone is aware about fracking and the cost that goes into it, they don't understand why would we put the cost. It doesn't make sense. Right. And this is the message I keep getting back from people that I'm talking to in the public. But Eric this week was able to go or last week, right, mm-hmm. and get mm-hmm. some good information, mm-hmm. and there are bills coming to Florida, so it's finally here, and wanted to, you know, hear from him the exact details on what he learned.
Sure, and thank you. I'm honored to be here. My name is Eric Rawlings, and I'm the chairman of the Orange Soil Water Conservation District, and I'm also Senator Darren Soto's spokesperson for Senate Bill 166. And Senate Bill 166 is the legislation to ban fracking in Florida. When you were talking about what we learned last week, let me clarify a little bit that some of these bills, specifically the two that were introduced last Thursday, were introduced last session as well. But because that the state representatives just decided to take a time out and leave their job early, some of the bills didn't get heard. So one of the bills that did get heard, it was defeated because Senator Soto attached a two-year moratorium. So, and Senator Richter, who has introduced the bills that we're going to be talking, or one of the bills in the Senate side, kind of had a fit and withdrew the bill and said, I'm not going to do it. So he didn't have the votes to override that two-year moratorium, which that tells you right there that they don't even want to wait 2 years. They don't want to wait 2 years for a study. They want to start doing this now.
Right.
I got to say, this is all extremely weird. I mean, we should be aware of environmental costs and risk, and we can talk about that. We should, but this is beyond, you know, what's the value of, like we were saying before, tar sand oil, why is it even viable for companies to do it? Well, the overall cost is actually more of a negative. I mean, there's more cost than benefit. All of those things, and we can argue about it. But this seems like a complete, who pulled that out of what and where and why? I mean, who could even make a profit fracking at Florida? It's almost the stuff of, I don't know.
Well, if there's oil, if there's oil, there's profit. If there's gas, there's profit. Now, of course, if it's $4 a gallon for gasoline, they're going to make a lot more profit. But just because it's $1.99 right now.
Cost, I mean, again, if we account for, I'm suspecting that if anybody even does a conservative account of environmental damage, that would be a crushing argument against ever doing it here.
Well, and it's just that not even just the environmental impact, but it's a quality of life and economic impact. When you have 20 million people, we're the third most populated state in the country now, and 97.3 million visitors came here last year. Now, I don't care how much oil they think is down there. I can guarantee you that 97.3 million visitors are going to make a better, more positive impact on our economic structure than any oil ever will. And then you have the component of, like you said, the risk. What if they have to drill down 10,000 feet and to get to the oil and gas? And what they do is they either do hydraulic fracturing or they do acid fracking. And acidification is what they used in Southwest Florida. When they inject, when they take out millions of gallons, for example, the Hogan Well in Southwest Florida, they were permitted to take 280 million gallons of water to frack that well. And they didn't use all of that. But they had the potential. Anytime that you go through the aquifer and you go 10,000 feet down into the rock, that's a long way to make sure that you never, ever have an accident. And we can see in other different parts of the country, in Pennsylvania and Ohio, and you look at the earthquakes in Oklahoma, there are repercussions from this. This isn't a safe bet. And even if they wanted to make it safer, there's really no room for any studies by the time that they want to start doing this. So basically what the petroleum industry is telling us right now, and what they told the League of Women Voters that hosted a town hall meeting right over here at the Garden Club in Mead Gardens, that we've been doing this for a long time, and nothing serious has ever happened. Now,
yeah, we really do.
So because we always will believe the petroleum industry because of ExxonMobil and the BP oil spill and the methane gas in the water and the water contamination in the northeastern part of the United States, the earthquakes in Oklahoma, the toxic water flow back. I mean, it goes on and on and on.
As the fact of, you know, whenever you build something, there are going to be bits that will break. You know what I mean? That's what's called risk management. I mean, you know it's going to leak. You know it's going to blow up. The question is, what can you do to minimize? It's going to happen anyway. 100% sure it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But a good company would minimize it.
Are they not concerned with the sinkholes here? I mean, that's a big thing.
Well they don't have to pay for them. Why would they be concerned?
Well, okay.
Bottom line, right? I mean, who's accountable?
Although I'm an elected official, the Soil and Water Conservation District Supervisors, we don't get paid. My day job for the last 13 years is selling real estate. And you want to take another economic impact. Think about if you're drawing down the aquifer with the water it takes to frack each well. And each well can be fracked up to 20 times. And if they use 10 million gallons per frack, they could have hundreds of wells in an area. And the thing is that there's no provision in the bills that have been introduced that you can go right up to the property of a housing development, a school. And so let's say that you're a developer and you're developing homes and you draw down the water table. And let's say we have a drought and let's say a sinkhole opens up. No one's ever going to want to buy a house in that subdivision. And if you own a house already, are you going to be able to sell it? It's gotten so bad for the water quality in Pennsylvania that they won't write homeowners insurance within a certain area of a well. So can you imagine that? I mean, if you're already adding the component of the wind mitigation and the hurricanes that we are already prone to, then add a fracking well. Mm-hmm. Are we going to be able to even close on a house because you're not going to be able to get insurance?
That's a great, by the way, topic from an economic perspective that's often underexpressed, that one of the first catastrophes, before the water comes, you know, to our houses from the coast, if you will, one of the primary catastrophes, economic catastrophes, will be insurance. And you need insurance to have a business. That's why they invented it in the early ages of commerce. So it's actually one of those horrific, ironical situations where the same people who tell us it's either the environment or the economy, that falls under the, either they don't know what the bleep they're talking about or else they're lying or some combination thereof.
Right.
No, we must do these things because they are economically, well, for other reasons too, by the way, but in this case, right, we're not even coming from any radical perspective. It just doesn't make any market sense whatsoever. I don't have to go to a radical environment.
I think that among the risk, one of the largest risks is the type of development you generate, right? Like, I think that the case of fracking was just starting really when I was moving to Colorado 5 years ago. And today, when you're landing in Colorado, you can see the amount of wells they have built. So it's not a development that occurs over a 20-year period of time. It's like, if this goes through, you have this problem 2 years down the line, a year and a half down the
line. It's a kind of scavenging, really, kind of, you know, surface scavenging, you know, the hill with the cost, slash and burn.
Yeah. Well, last year they drilled 40,000 wells. You know, they said, well, only 5% really had an issue. Well, what's, you want to put 40,000 wells over our aquifer or through our aquifer and say, oh, only 5% really had a problem.
And that's
underestimated. A lot.
Because,
sure.
That's ones that really like kind of negligence and crime. It's not all the total cost that they don't have to account for that they put on somebody else.
The website that they have, that tracks, fracking fluid and how much they're doing and where they're doing it is, owned by the petroleum industry, and it's self-regulated.
Ah, self-regulation. Gotta love that.
If we're going to go 10 miles over the speed limit, are we going to just write ourselves a ticket because we did the wrong thing? I really doubt it.
Yeah, self-regulation is up there in the realms of
destructive
fairy tales.
And there was something you talked about, how they're not going to have the time on the state side to even look at the impact studies. And we see that as well, a parallel with trying to pass the Trans-Pacific Partnership, when Congress is presented with the text to review TPP, they have 60 days to do their up or down vote. You can't do impact studies on a trade deal in 60 days that are going to provide you any real insight into what that deal is. So that vote is virtually useless. It's a symbolic vote that's not going to have any real facts, any real impact studies for anything. No. So that's why I've been so concerned, because I see this rushing, this push, just, you know, forget about it. Let's just go. We got it. And then this is what we need, this propaganda. And even during the Super Bowl, I noticed this year here in Florida, there were pro-fracking ads. And they're not going to spend that money for no reason.
Exactly. They're doing damage control before the damage is even done, you know, and that brings me to a point. And if you guys can bear with me, I'm going to read this, the Senate bill and the House bill. House bill was filled by Rodriguez, who's in Southwest Florida, Representative Rodriguez, and then, Senator Richter in the Southwest, part of the state as well. Both their bills are identical, and I would venture to say that they had a lot of help writing this with the petroleum industry. And I'm gonna read line 82 to 91. The legislator declares that all matters relating to the regulation of the exploration, development, production, processing, storage, and transportation of oil and gas are preempted to the state, to the exclusion of all existing, future ordinances or regulations relating thereto adopted by any county, municipality, or other political subdivision of the state. Any such existing ordinance or regulation is void. A county or municipality may, however, enforce an existing zoning ordinance adopted before January 1st of last year if the ordinance is otherwise valid.
So the fracking that happened over in the Everglades area and the Naples area, that was Dan Hughes that did this acid fracking. And, you know, we hear rock, you know, because that's what's in most. But, I mean, here we're talking limestone, you know. So they're in not only limestone, but then we're also in and close to our Everglades, which is impactful for the entire United States. We just spent all this money on the Clean Water Act last year for Florida, and this will really, you know, just it's going to reverse any gains that we might possibly get out of that act. it just blows me away, the push. But down in Naples, there is a group down there, Karen Dwyer, that's been working, and they have successfully started to pass anti-fracking bans in certain cities.
And that's what you're referencing to is the ordinance that was just passed in Bonita Springs.
There's more than one.
There has been two ordinances, one in Coconut Creek and one in Bonita Springs. The other ones are resolutions. So those are, and I will tell you that there are so many that have passed that between resolutions and ordinances that 35% of the population of Florida has covered under ordinances. But what I just read to you preempts that. It gets rid of it. It voids it. So basically what Tallahassee and the petroleum industry under their direction, it sounds like, that they're saying, we don't care what Orlando thinks or what Orange County thinks or Collier County or Lee
or the science or the, you know,
whatever we're going to
city of Orlando
or the real accounting.
It says right there, you know, that adopted by county, municipality or other political subdivision in the state, they're covering everything is void. So you've got to really wonder how, if we can't protect our own area where we live in, why do we even have local elections? If they're going to preempt this and they're going to say this is up to the DEP only, and they're the ones that are going to tell us where and when and how much, that's really scary, because that means that they can go right up to your lot line, that they're the ones that determine how safe or where they're going to do it. And that we have absolutely no say whatsoever.
I mean, we already know that the national elections, I mean, not necessarily Senate or Congress, right? I mean, you can send troublemakers up there that at least will scream and yell. But that's a waste of time. I know everybody hates me for it, but I can't help. But that's a complete waste of time. Really. I mean, you might, if you're amused, whatever.
It's entertaining.
But local was supposed to matter.
It's entertaining, but that's kind of about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like, and it's twisted, kind of like a really, really bad, like real bad quality twisted, entertainment. Dark stuff for my entertainment, personally.
Well.
But that's not it. No.
It's bad quality entertainment,
Too much for me. But local elections were supposed to matter precisely like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a still of a hope. I mean, even that's electoral important. Reforms were taking place meaningfully only at local levels. So my God, you managed to throw a chiller.
Yeah, and I also want to stress that this isn't a Democrat or a Republican or an independent issue.
Exactly.
Because I will tell you, and Senator Soto, who's a Democrat, who's also running for Congress, but has been in the Senate legislature for 8 years, that also Representative Rene Plasencia, he's a Republican. He's out UCF, Full Sail area is his district. I had coffee with him for an hour and 10-minute meeting, and he's totally against fracking. Mike Miller, my associate supervisor on the Soil and Water Board, Lisa Ray, had a 45-minute meeting with Representative Mike Miller. He is District 47, Republican, and his district is right here in Winter Park that goes all the way to the Conway chain of lakes. He's against fracking. Commissioner Pete Clark, he's a nonpartisan, seat just like I am, but, he's against fracking. And he is going to be working with Lori Cunniff to come up with language so we can submit our own ordinance or resolution, hopefully an ordinance, in Orange County. That people are concerned about their quality of life. And this is not a Democratic or Republican or an independent issue. It's all of us together against big corporations that are only out for monetary gain for the very, very, very few.
I mean, it's a fight. This not ludicrous is not the right word, scandalous attempt to disenfranchise local government,
yes,
you just described to us. Of course, it's a fight, so it's good and it's encouraging, especially at the nonpartisan level, which I think is the only place we have hope for anything in general, to do this precisely, to raise these issues. They're supposed to be a significant potential for fracking in Florida. It's really flying. I mean, we know, but everybody knows. I mean, about Pennsylvania and the Northeast and some places in the West.
Well, the J fields in the Panhandle, all the way to the extreme West. Mm-hmm. It's actually even a different time zone, but they've been pulling a lot of oil in the 70s. We were one of the top producers in the country. Now those wells are pretty much exhausted. They're still getting some oil out, but if they can go back and they can refrack those wells to get the residual amount out. And there lies another problem that a lot of these people don't know where the old test wells are, and no one knows what ones are capped and what ones aren't. So if you're going to go down and you're going to pressurize this fracking fluid, and you hit another one of those, you hit a chamber or you hit a pocket, if you will, and you hit that, what happens then? You know, and then all of a sudden you're releasing this and you don't know where it's going. Is it going to go back up those wells? Mm-hmm. And, you know, another thing too is that, Southwest Florida has, some oil, and that's the main focus right now. But then, Southlake was just mentioned that, Carolina, that you just mentioned that there's a lot of oil in the Everglades, or so it seems. Now I don't know why we would spend so much money on trying to, we spent $17 million out of, I think this last appropriation was $17 million after hundreds of millions of dollars to restore the Everglades. So, you know.
And that's been one of Scott's selling points on here's the good I've done for Florida. You know, here is my environmental side. I do care just like you do. And then here we're going to have a reversal.
Yeah. Another thing that when you, in Broward County right now, the people are up in arms because they're doing a test well right now. And that's just for regular oil. So
they're in Broward. They're on the East Coast then.
Yeah. It's on the western side of Broward County.
And all this in a world where oil prices are low, which is nice in some sense, but it's reflective overall of the global economy still being comatose on the table since 2008 and there being no recovery anywhere. Well, so I
want to fact check, but there are these parallels with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, because the Trans-Pacific Partnership, if it passes, they will be expediting these licenses for fracking and exporting. They will be rolling back the authority of the EPA. And
fracking is at the bottom of the list of all the different ways in which we're going to get raped through a trade agreement such as this.
It's not. That's how they got Japan to sit at the table. Japan needs the natural gas.
But there's plenty of cheap oil. We have so much oil in the world today, we don't know what to do. And again, I'm not even talking about how short-sighted that is, and we should go, you know, develop if we actually had significant environmental policy, there would be jobs, schools will rise, engineers will go. Best shot we have at giving ourselves a little bit more time to adjust.
I agree with Dr. Valek on this. You know, we seem to stray away from the local issues, which impact us directly, and we focus on the international and worldwide, and then everybody else's lifestyles and environment gets improved, and then ours is lacking behind. I mean, I'm basically a victim of the environmental policies that the Jeb Bush administration, while he was here in Florida, that he implemented. I bought a home and paid an extra $5,000 for my lot. 4 years later, when I decided to move into it, I decided to plant trees. The whole California mentality of replacing trees, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It takes me approximately 3 hours to dig a 3-foot hole to plant one tree, because Jeb Bush and his cronies decided that he was going to favor the construction companies here and put a policy that is so lenient it shouldn't even be in place, where they can actually field your property with waste.
Yeah.
So every time I dig, what I find is cinder blocks, rewire. I mean, even Burger King sandwiches there that somebody tossed because they couldn't digest it, it's there. I even went to see an attorney about this. And she just kind of like did all the motions and took my mind the whole bit. Then I went to the EPA, which is, by the way, almost impossible to find here in Orlando, Florida. The way they got it programmed is you have to call Atlanta, Georgia and get one of their offices. And then good luck with that, because they'll say, well, you know, we have these laws in place, but the state's kind of like, you know, do whatever.
Yeah, so
you
know, it wouldn't be EPA, it would be the Department of Environmental or the DEP.
Right, and then you wonder, okay, doesn't federal law supersede local law? I mean,
well, it just depends on what the topic is, I suppose. You know, the DEP would be the one that would be regulating all the fracking. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say there was something really horrible that happens. Let's say like it has in several parts in Orlando where it becomes a Superfund site. And then the EPA, mm-hmm. the Environmental Protection Agency on a federal level will come in. So there's a million different steps. And, you know, for a lot of times if you have somebody that's elected, and they come in and they start cutting budget items. You know, the environment and education always seem to be one of the first to cut. And when you think about the quality of life issue and about our future, what's more important than the air and the water that we use and that everybody uses and the education of our kids?
So, well, you have to look at the politicians though. I mean, when you look at their lifestyle, they can afford to send their children to a private school. They can afford to send their children to the best pool in the area, you know. And as far as beach homes where, you know, certain things wash up, you know, they basically live in the best areas where none of that, you know, approaches them.
Pretty soon they will have not gated communities, but bubbled communities.
Being that we have these people up there making policy who are, for some reason, not impacted, you know, by, you know, what's going on with the environment. How are you going to change this? I mean, they have no incentives whatsoever. If it doesn't, it's kind of like the whole gay thing. Now politicians are coming out going like, oh, I have a family member who's gay. That's because it impacts them directly. But when you have that kind of wealth and it's not impacting you, what is the incentive to change policy outside of the fact that you can get booted out of your job from the voters? And that doesn't really happen here.
There it is. I mean, I was going to say until, you know, you depressed me a little bit, but sorry. That's okay.
I'm the dark cloud. I know.
But that maybe at the local level again, sometimes you're getting, I mean, it's odd for in Americans because we haven't seen it for so long. It's actually called semi-functional democracy. Where Republicans and Democrats, they have their pressures from the party, they have their donors, you know, of course, locally, right, not at the same level as we're talking about nationally, and they have a problem. Whatever your stated ideology of your party, if the majority of the people in your district are opposed to it, that's democracy for you, right? We don't trust politicians to do the right thing because they're oh so wise and oh so good. That's called tyranny, and it doesn't work. The whole, like, they do good because they want to get reelected. They're just as greedy or whatever, unscrupulous. We can't call upon the personal characteristic of politicians. It has to be a system that rewards representing me well and punishes, you know.
Well, I mean, even the systems of information are rigged. The other day I was, I used to have cable for the longest time, and I usually watch C-SPAN, which nobody ever watches, right? But there's a lot of information there. But then when you look at the TV station, you're flipping channels, poor people cannot afford cable, therefore they do not get C-SPAN. Have you ever noticed that? Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, it is boring, but you would think that should be part of the public access, and it should be part of the non-cable type system.
All right, no, it's not on the digital antenna thing, right?
No, it's not. And even if you scroll between frequencies, good luck trying to find it. So the information is not there.
I really can't answer to that point because I don't have cable and I don't even have a TV, and it's by choice because I really don't feel that the quality of programming outside of PBS is really there. You know, I look at, not to get off topic, but when the reality shows that aren't really reality, are then becoming presidential candidates, and then they're leading as the, you know, Republican nominee. That's really scary, you know. And and to answer your question on a local level, all politics is local, and we do have a responsibility, and like you said, that if we try to keep it as local as possible, then you do have more input. Now, when you have corporations that come in and help write legislation such as the bill that I just mentioned, or the two bills that I just mentioned, it does get scary, because then it does strip our rights away. So people really need to speak up. They need to call their representative. And, you know, if you're in this area, call Representative Mike Miller and say, hey, I know that you're against fracking, but you've got to stop these bills in the House.
Right. It's time to start talking about it.
It's even late to start talking about it. We were doing this last year. We were filling buses up to Tallahassee, and I was honored enough to be asked to speak on the Capitol steps, and probably was one of the most nervous days of my life, but we got our point across, and we got people to start reading these bills. But, you know, when I went into Senator Soto's Senate Bill 166 to ban fracking last year was one paragraph long. And I would go into representatives' offices and a couple senators' offices in Tallahassee, and I said, have you read Senator Soto's bill? And, oh, well, you know, I've been really busy, and here's a copy of it. It's one paragraph long. Now, it's really concerning that something that, if the politicians aren't paying attention, that are going to be voting yay or nay on this, and this is going to impact our life forever if this passes. So it is our responsibility that we educate our representatives. Like you said, they're representing us. We need to speak to them.
Again,
yeah, well, theoretically.
Barely.
And, I think that if more people knew what the impact is going to be on this state, that they would be a lot more scared. The thing is that once these are passed, you know how hard it is to get things reversed.
Right.
You know, you're talking about adding, you know, right now these bills are, and haven't been, to my knowledge, as of last week, haven't been, even in a committee meeting yet. And so we have an opportunity to have our representatives and our senators to add language to this, to amendment, if it goes to a vote, that we can add that we want a moratorium for 4 years to study this, that we pile up and support the Natural Resources Committee and have Senator Soto's bill to be heard, to see if the public wants a ban on fracking. And I would gather that anybody reads this these bills, that they would 99%, unless they own a lot of stock in oil companies, that they would say, no, we don't want it here.
And Dan Hughes, that did do that illegal fracking. Of course, it's one of those types of funds where Rick Scott doesn't have direct management of his money, but it ended up through that fund. He is invested in them. I have the information from Sierra Club because, you know, they've been concerned about Trans-Pacific Partnership. And what it says here is, in order for the United States to export natural gas to another country, the Department of Energy must first conduct a public analysis to determine whether the exports are consistent with public interest. It's critical to understanding the environmental and economic impacts associated with natural gas exports to and building a deliberate energy policy that protects the interests of the American public. Unfortunately, the DOE loses its authority to regulate exports of natural gas to countries with which the United States has a free trade agreement that includes so-called national treatment for trade in gas. So TPP would mean the automatic approval of liquid natural-fied gas export permits without any review or analysis on the TPP countries. Mm-hmm. So there we go again, the big rush. It just needs to be built, and we're not even going to look at the impact.
Well, you know, and another thing that's interesting is that the petroleum industry says, that we really want to be energy independent. that we don't. So if we're taking all these risks and we are drawing the natural gas and oil from all these, from different shale rocks and from Florida, if you will, that, and now we're not going to keep it for ourselves and we're exporting it. So what happens in 20 years? So are the prices are going to go back up and then we have no other options. So this is if that TPP is passed and they're going to be exporting this, then, you know, this is all a sham.
Exactly. Because with TPP, if there is an energy crisis, we've lost our rights to our natural resources. The corporate contract, the profits, that is what rules supreme. And so that those profits must be made. We have no rights to that gas. The corporation owns it. Our natural gas will go to Japan and we will not
have
it.
As a foreigner, soon to be American citizen, if all goes well. And
congratulations.
Still being in Homeland Security.
Congratulations, Charlotte.
Yeah, my wife is. But jokes aside, let me welcome you to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Big corporations come with all the power in the world and steal your natural resources and enslave your children.
This is what I'm hearing.
This is now we're, you know, this is our last chance, Americans, you know, they're turning on us now. We were somewhat protected, some of us. We were white and middle class and all of these advantages. We were doing pretty good.
My family is very privileged in South America. Mm-hmm. We're on the upper crust, almost rich. And that's the messaging I'm seeing from them the last couple weeks is like, don't you guys realize this
running
is
out
what's
of steam.
Been happening yeah. here and over here, and they just come in and kill the local leaders, and mm-hmm. I guess it's coming to America now, and now you're going to have to start dealing with it. Mm-hmm. And I realize my cousins, you know, I have so many more privileges than them, but yeah, that's a hard-hitting, mm-hmm. You know, to hear from the international community coming to
and
us.
And this is where I think, you know, this kind of nonpartisan is the only chance we got. I mean, frankly, at least the non-horrific, violent, you know, decline, God knows what. Never mind ideology, never mind how we exactly want to do things because of our different ideas, but nobody thinks that dismantling the entire edifice and turning it into warlordism is a good idea. There's truly a majority of Americans. Now, when it comes to the correlation between Americans' opinions and policy, at the federal level, zero. Local, I think there's more chance still to push back.
I mean, this is very common even in the econ lit, right? Mm-hmm. People talking about how local solutions to these type of problems actually mm-hmm. do work better, right? In the long run, at least in the short run, given that like a larger.
You're talking about solutions, though. I mean, the core problem that we have is nobody's even looking for a solution.
But
this
no
is
one
not
is.
A viable,
and, right.
pro-business, pro-America
right.
solution.
No, this that's is. My point, right? Like, even at the local level right yeah. now, the system is breaking apart, as you were mm-hmm. mentioning, right? Like, even at the local level, you want to, or like Jesse was mentioning, right? You want to talk to the EPA, and it's incredibly hard to find in Orlando.
They have no budget.
Not even that.
Even in their big centers in North Carolina, I have a good buddy working there, you know? It's they sit around, do studies, and leave. I mean, everybody's leaving basically because they're tired of doing studies and nothing happens out of them.
No one gets, they don't get hair.
You know, they can't. They yeah. can show, oh, look, this is horrible. This really needs stopped. This is killing kids. This many per year at least. Okay, file it.
You talked about it earlier about like the visitors here. Well, you know, that's really Florida's industry. That's our bread and butter.
Right.
And then if we're, mm-hmm. we heard a few years ago about the Sable Trail pipeline that was going to be coming from Alabama and Georgia that's proposed. It was
if I may interrupt, just to add on to what you were saying before that Governor Scott, that company that's bringing the Sable Trail pipeline.
He's
$58,000 he's invested in that.
And that's Spectra.
Yes, exactly. That has a long list of violations.
Yeah, corruption is legal in America.
And when I heard.
Especially Florida. We're number one for corruption.
Yeah, we're the future, right? Isn't that what Jeb Bush is?
Yeah. I said we beat Louisiana. I was like,
Florida.
Wow. that's really hard to do. If you're more corrupt than Louisiana, geez.
But when they first were talking about it, made the initial proposal, it was going to stop outside of Disney. So that's for me why I think Buddy Dyer is attached to the TPP text. I'm not 100% convinced it's only for Disney and Mears that he's involved with it. But we were concerned, you know, is it really stopping there for us, for Floridians? And now we've seen there's a new proposal to go ahead and get that down out to the ports down south. So once they start putting all these 40,000 wells in, how many terminals are we going to need down there? How many wetlands are we going to dredge? How many statuaries? What is that going to do for what I love of Florida, why I've stayed this whole time through Bush and Scott and all of that? So, yeah, it's very concerning as a Floridian.
I don't know if they would drill 40,000 is what they drilled nationally last year. So it wasn't, if it's 40,000 in Florida, man, we are done for. So, but you know, I don't know about the, enough about the Sable Trail pipeline. But to my knowledge is if you're starting to extract this gas and then TPP goes through, you need the infrastructure to get that if you're going to export it, because we don't have that because we're not allowed to export petroleum right now. So if you, it's these things aren't coincidences.
Exactly.
You know, they're just not like, oh, we just decided to frack in Florida or we start fracking in other areas, and then you need the infrastructure to get it out from where it's being fracked to wherever it's going to go. And so if you're starting now, they're like, well, no decisions have been made. Or like you say, they're not really going to frack in Florida. It's there by the time you wake up one morning and it's already done. So if we don't start fighting, if we don't start sticking up for ourselves to protect what left we have of our natural beauty here and our livelihood and our economy, that it's going to be taken away from us. And then by the time people realize it, it's going to be too late. So if you're not calling your representatives and you're not calling your senators, if you are not objecting, if you're not making appointments with them at their local offices, ultimately, because of our own personal responsibility, we're the ones to blame. Okay. So the corporations are bad, but you just don't give up or think that somebody else is going to do it for you.
Reward them for being bad.
Yeah.
Again,
yeah. No, yeah. You're going to like, well, that was easy. Well, then we're going to get a little bit, ask a little bit more. Well, no one's pushing back. Well, then I'll take a little bit more. And by the time it is in your backyard, it's too late. So.
Right. And that's like, for me, why I keep encouraging the community, you know, the elections are coming and, you know, we know Dyer's running again. Looks like he's going to have some opposition, Randy Ross. But, anytime I put this stuff out there, no comments, complete silence. And I would like to see people outside of just me asking these guys what's going on, you know, because Buddy Dyer can log in and read the text at home at night. He's one of the 605 that has that access when Congress can't even see it.
Well, let me ask you this. Who's the favorite among the local activists here?
For what?
For mayor?
For mayor? I couldn't begin to throw that out there.
I'm supporting Mayor Dyer because on his environmental initiatives, he's about one of the greenest mayors in the Southeast in the United States. I don't know if I'm supposed to say this right now or not, but I will. But on November 13th, they're going to start a one tree, one person program to start a reforestation project to have 300,000 trees planted by 2040. That's pretty significant. He's been really good on the effort that we've been trying to, save Constitution Green. On the sustainability office, and Chris Castro sits in that office, and so does John Ipple. Chris is the co-founder of Ideas for Us.
Right.
So, from everything that I've seen every step of the way, and also Commissioner Sheehan's been awesome about environmental issues. She's opposed to fracking. She wants to see, styrofoam banned in the city of Orlando. Those are important issues to me. Now, like I said, I don't know about the Sable pipeline and any connection to any city officials.
I don't either. I can't keep track of all of this stuff, to be honest.
That's the characteristics of a system that works like this. So everywhere you look, I mean, you will find these kind of problems all the way up and down.
But I do want to comment, though, the push for Orlando being environmental. It's not just a personal thing for Buddy Dyer. We are on the ICLEI list. We pay ICLEI to advise us.
What's that?
ICLEI, they help with recommendations for cities so that when they move forward with new building and, development, that in the future they will be in line with the proposals from Agenda 21 under the UN.
Okay, so kind of a
it's tied to ICLEI. I don't have the time with homeschooling, but I haven't found the fee yet. Apparently we pay for this service. What I do know is in 2013, El Paso's fee, and in the fee is based on your city's population, their fee was $500,000 for these recommending these consultative services. So I love ideas. I love Chris and all of them, the Hive, and and I love seeing the energy. I do love the sustainability, the front gardens. I am in a privileged neighborhood. So like in a six block, grid in my neighborhood, we have at least 12 front yard gardens.
That's awesome.
And these are things that need to happen, but there's also, it's not local initiatives. It's initiatives that are being funded from the international and the national. And so
you need everything. You need to combine all possibilities to have a chance here and all different approaches. We've talked about it in the press, right? I mean, we are in a very challenging position. I kind of call it facetiously, the cluster beep problem, but I could also call it interconnected nonlinear dynamic problem. Same thing, right? You can't solve a problem because it's interconnected in strange and accelerated and feedbacky ways with everything else. So you pull on one thing, you're not really solving the problem. You could be doing a good thing, but you still want to be doing it. You don't want to stop doing everything just because you're realizing the immense challenge facing us. Yeah. We should have started doing this sort of things in the 70s, Pete, but we're trying, right? We were kids.
Right.
No, so it's not our fault.
And I think it's great that we have the focus here in that. But I know Lawana and Paramore Geltzer, she would love so much more help in that particular area, cleaning that area up where the asthma rates are so high in the nation.
But see, and those are the two Superfund sites there. So
right.
Even if we wanted to help, and Lawana was invited and spoke in front of the Orange Soil Water Conservation District, in front of all the supervisors, and our partner from the NCRS, and we can't get involved in that. We are excluded because when it goes to a Superfund site, we are relieved of all responsibility. Only they can handle that. Sometimes for good reason. They're really complex, really, really deep issues, both physically and on how it has to be treated, that there's a lot of people that locally might not have that knowledge.
Right.
So, but with that said,
but that is an example of here on a local level, someone looking for help and where do they go? Where do they go? And it's an important issue.
Right. Well, and the EPA won't let us help.
Right.
You know, believe me, I would like to answer everybody's request for help in a positive and meaningful way, but our hands are tied. And to be honest, I don't have the ability, the education, or the know-how to clean up something that is as complex as the one that is underneath the Creative Village.
Tell us about it.
And they're going to build Creative Village on top of this area.
You know me, right. Like I told you, I don't go out much. So,
well, it is Creative Village is, which of course was stripped of the millions of dollars that was promised, but because of the infighting at the level, and this is my opinion, up in Tallahassee last year, Governor Scott vetoed that portion of the money that was supposed to be the seed money to get Creative Village, which is also going to house. It's a blighted area where the old arena was downtown. Mm-hmm. It's 66 acres. It is, a good portion of it is on a toxic waste area from, what I believe is, was a type of coal ash, that was from a power plant from 1919 to 1963 or something like that.
I wasn't
a really long time.
I wasn't aware of that. What I was aware of, and maybe it's a different spot, cause like you said, there's the two spots. I know there was the old Central Florida fairgrounds way, way back in the day. And back then they didn't regulate, you know, if you needed to dump oil on the ground. You know, because you're fixing your car, they didn't regulate any of that. So that area, and I think there's even one, a spot out on the east, side of town over, I want to say Aloma area, university area. I think there's even
it could
a
Superfund
be, I mean, site.
The Orlando Sentinel is sitting under from all the 100 years of dumping toxic chemicals on that, and they're like, well, Blue Jacket Park.
There's
a park there, like,
we're building it.
Don't touch it.
I won't live there.
Well, and they have
military camp.
I was
in the military. I know what happens to all the batteries and the acid.
Sure.
And,
when we didn't even realize.
In Blue Jacket Park.
Yeah. Old Goldman Park. I wouldn't live there personally. I don't trust the same people Jesse was talking about to having certified that there's enough, that hasn't been cleaned. It wasn't even declared.
They said, another thing. If you're not on a well and you're getting your water from somewhere on a municipal, your water isn't going to be affected because it's piped in. Now, who knows, you know, how true is that going to be if, you know, the water that flows underneath us doesn't stop. So eventually, if it's going to be somewhere, hopefully that they're testing for it and we have really good water through OUC. But, on some of these areas, it's better not to touch it. It's just like in the, I believe it was in the Hudson River with, GE, they had dumped all that stuff that they wanted to clean up the river. And they said, it's better you start stirring that stuff up. It's going to cause a bigger problem than it is to just leave there. But that's very unfortunate.
You know, this is so reminiscent of, as a good example, Fight Club, where Brad Pitt is selling the, fat back to the rich people in forms of soap.
You know? Oh, yeah, he buys the fat from liposuction and then turns it into a high-end kind of, you know, boutique soap. And he says that the irony, right, of selling rich women.
Smells like flowers, and doesn't think what's underneath.
Well, and the other thing, you know how much I don't want to talk about the political candidates, but what I find curious, nobody mentioning about Jeb Bush after Katrina, the big push for private firms that would help come and, you know, hey, FEMA can't respond, but hey, you could call these guys up and they'll be there right away. And he invested all this money. And then he's running for candidate. Nobody's talking about those.
And
those
there is economic literature about these kind of things. I mean, most famous is probably Naomi Klein's, senior moment. I mean, the concept is crisis capitalism, but shock doctrine. Shock doctrine. Right? I mean, she articulates it well. It's a good book. I mean, but it's explained in so many ways for over a century, probably. Usually we just don't expect it to happen at our front door if we're fortunate enough to live, you know, in the rich world.
I mean, Naomi Klein uses a lot of the case of how this exact problem happened to Chile with Milton Friedman after Pinochet, right?
Or you make the crisis if it won't come by itself.
Yeah, you basically just poke the bear if you want the bear up and then run away and let everybody else deal with the bear.
Well, you know, and a lot of this, like Katrina or... Let's say there was a significant breach of a well and there were millions of gallons of toxic chemicals that, you know, by the way, that the toxic chemicals that they use in fracking are proprietary. So they don't have to
disclose. Don't even know what they're pumping.
So yeah. Well, so if there's an accident, if there's an accident, if you don't know how much of whatever you're using, how do you clean it up? If you don't know what you're cleaning, what's the best solution on that? And you know, when what happens if we start, it gets on the, discussion of privatizing water, you know, that they've done that in South America. So, really bad happened where we're going to have to, when you're talking about
Bolivia took care of that problem.
Yeah.
Didn't
they did. Yeah, they did. If we have a bunch of oil and gas, who cares if we don't have clean water? Right. And we don't have an accessibility to water. You look at California, and they are in such dire straits right now. But did you know that everybody's on water restriction except the petroleum companies that can frack or that do frack. So they can use that water. They can still keep pumping that water to frack with, but everybody else is on water restriction. And this is another scary thing that they are using the flowback water, the old fracking water to, water United States Department of Agriculture organic vegetables. So that's scary.
You know, it's not only those companies, it's also the almond companies. Yeah. Use water to grow the almonds.
We're not just worried about that, but we're worried about the people who have flushed pharmaceuticals down their toilet, and there's pharmaceutical residue in that water and all kinds of things, right?
That sure, might be part of the health plan.
At least we know what those chemicals are.
Recycled. Oh, top of the hour. Okay.
Top of the hour.
Hopefully you're scandalized. We'll pick it up here in a few minutes.
Yep, and let me just go ahead and say the legal stuff I have to say. The views of opinions stated here today are ours, solely ours, and not of those of WPRK, Rollins College, its staff, or anybody else for that matter. It's just ours, and we are right.
All those who are right, too.